You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, and streaming live on Ustream, this is AfterBuzz TV at the movies. Tonight's hosts are two of America's top film critics, Scott Movie Mance and Ben Lyons. We'll break down the movie magic and get you all the behind-the-scenes news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, picking up where the show leaves off and the buzz continues, it's AfterBuzz TV at the movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the fabulous AfterBuzz TV studios here in sunny California. I'm Ben Lyons from the E! Network. Maria Menounos is off celebrating Labor Day weekend with the Obamas somewhere. So today I'm joined by Access Hollywood's own Scott Mance.
Movie Mance.
At Movie Mance on Twitter. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, Ben Lyons. I am very excited to be here. The summer's over. Not a moment too soon.
Yeah,
if I see one more sequel,
superhero movie. I know. Last time we were here, we were recapping all the hits and misses of the summer season. So with Labor Day coming, I know it's not the official end of summer on the calendar, but it is when you're talking movies, right?
Definitely. But yeah. It also means that award season begins. Because
yes.
This is the weekend when you have not only the Venice Film Festival and Telluride, but you also have the Toronto Film Festival.
You'll be up there covering for Access Hollywood. I'll be there for the E! Channel. I think it's my seventh time up in Toronto.
Yep.
I love the Toronto International Film Festival. It's a grown-ups film festival. You see people like Jeremy Irons and Darren Aronofsky, and it's very distinguished up there. No gifting suites, no crazy after parties.
Exactly.
It's about movies. It's about filmmakers, and this year is looking to be a great slate of films, as always.
Well, what I like about Toronto is it's sort of in between Cannes and Sundance, because it's not as glitzy
as
Cannes.
It's physically in between the two.
Yeah, physically, too.
Yes.
But it's not as glitzy as Cannes, and it's not as, like, you know, grungy and independent as Sundance. It's right in the middle. And for people who are burned out of the summer blockbusters, like I know you are, and I definitely am, this is where you really get back to serious movies. And for people who love serious movies. And before we get into just this year's festival, let's talk about why the Toronto Film Festival is so important. It really is the beginning of award season. Look at some of the movies that have come out of Toronto in the past few years. In fact, out of the last 3 years, two of the movies to win Best Picture at the Oscars premiered at the Toronto Film Festival.
That's right, King's Speech and Slumdog Millionaire.
And Up in the Air, yeah. While it didn't win, it was definitely one of the movies that premiered at Toronto.
The Wrestler made a lot of noise at Toronto the year it came out. Juno
is
another
absolutely.
Film that made a lot of noise at Toronto. And it's just that perfect time of year when, okay, everybody's had their summer vacation or they've done their traveling. You get back to work and you start to talk about the movies that will carry through the award season. And this year, there are a few that are really standing out.
Definitely. There's a few Oscar contenders already. Let's start with the man who is no stranger to the Toronto Film Festival, our buddy, our pal, George Clooney.
Our buddy, our pal? Really? You're hanging out in Lake Cuomo? You're going over to Italy and doing it big?
Well, you know what? I like his movies. Ever since Out of Sight, which came out in 1998, he really hasn't made a bad movie. I mean, most of his movies have either been really good or just flat out great. Look at Michael Clayton, Up in the Air. And this year he's got two strong films going into Toronto.
I don't know how I felt about Men Who Stare at Goats. I was on that premiere line with you up in Toronto that year.
Yeah. Everybody,
but they're ambitious movies and they're passion projects.
Exactly.
He hasn't taken the straight paycheck movie since the last Oceans movie.
Well, and also, if you want to go back even further, Batman and Robin.
Right.
I mean, that was 1997.
The Peacemaker. He had that time in the late 90s when he was making those films. But now he's become a huge star, and he has enough money to live comfortably the rest of his life. So now
right.
he seems to focus his attention on movies that are really important to him and for passion projects is a phrase that gets thrown around in Hollywood too often. But the one he's got up at Toronto that I'm most excited for, I saw it already, so I loved it, is The Ides of March.
Yeah, I saw it too.
He's directing and taking the less glamorous role, which I like when actors do that. He's done that a few times now when he's directed. He's not taking the lead like Affleck did in The Town, for example.
Right. Good Night and Good Luck is a great example. And that was also a Toronto Film Festival movie in 2005. Yes, in The Ides of March, he co-stars in the film, co-produced it, co-wrote it, and he directs it. This is his fourth movie after Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Good Night and Good Luck, and Leatherheads, which was not very good. But he definitely is back in true form with The Ides of March. It's a political thriller, and it really does play out like a thriller. The intensity really snowballs as the film goes along, and the movie features great performances from the likes of Ryan Gosling, Marissa Tomei, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and of course Clooney himself.
Paul Giamatti as well.
Paul Giamatti's great.
Max Minghella, people know from The Social Network. You mentioned that it's a political thriller. It's really just a coming-of-age story.
That's true.
Ryan Gosling coming into his own as a young man who's finding himself at the center of this presidential election, this race where Clooney is on the fast track possibly to becoming the Democratic nominee. And boy, it's good.
It's a very good film.
It gets really good.
And everyone I know who's seen it has also loved the movie, and it really is a front runner going into award season. Of course, there are a lot of movies that are coming out later in the year that we'll get to.
Well, let's talk about award season. Sometimes it happens with actors. We've seen it over the years where you have two performances in one year. You think like a Leonardo DiCaprio the year you had Departed and Blood Diamond, where
right.
maybe one performance outweighs the other performance, or people seem to gravitate towards one as opposed to the other. Ryan Gosling has two performances that will be up for consideration in the best actor in the leading category.
Right.
Sometimes actors have a great supporting turn and then a great leading turn, different categories. This time he's going up against himself. And we mentioned The Ides of March, but you and I love Drive.
Drive. Let's talk about Drive. This is a very unconventional film. You could sort of compare it to like something Quentin Tarantino might do, but Tarantino's strength is more about dialogue, and one of the strengths of Drive is the lack of dialogue. Scenes are really allowed to play out. Performances are really allowed to breathe. This is a very intense and unpredictable movie. Ryan Gosling plays a stunt car driver who moonlights as a getaway driver for robberies. And the movie starts off one way with a very interesting romance with his neighbor, played by Carey Mulligan from An Education. And it quickly turns into something else, and it gets very unpredictable. And then, of course, one of the bad guys in the movie is, of all people, Albert Brooks. And you will see Drive, and you will never see Albert Brooks in the same way again after seeing this
movie. Albert Brooks, the second cousin of mine once removed or something. I got to figure out how we're related.
Is that true?
But yes, I am related to Albert Brooks.
I did
somehow.
Not know that.
I did not know he could play this type of menacing character after seeing him in all these funny performances over the years.
Right.
He's opposite Ron Perlman as well, who I love on Sons of Anarchy. But what's great about Gosling in this is, like you said, the lack of dialogue. He tells you a lot about his character and his character's emotions and point of view without having to say it. It's a very violent movie.
Very violent.
That might scare away some of the Academy voters, but this movie's like the video game Grand Theft Auto mixed with a 70s French film.
That's funny. I sort of compared it. I said it was Fast and Furious with brains.
What did I email you right before I saw you at the screening? I said,
so Jason Statham, right?
This is, would be a good Jason Statham movie. And sure enough, it was a great version of one
great.
Of those films. Christina Hendricks from Mad Men.
And I didn't even recognize her in this
great
movie,
little
by
supporting
the way.
Role
yep.
for her.
Awesome.
A wonderful cast and a terrific soundtrack and score that really gets underneath your skin. And just an L.A. movie. One of my favorites, if not my favorite so far
Definitely.
This year.
Me too.
So I hope the people who are voting for the various different awards from SAGs and Globes and all these things, they look at Gosling and Drive as much, and if not more so, than in Ides of March.
And let's not forget his summer turn in which he was a real revelation in Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah.
You know, Gosling has been doing such great work now for a decade. You know, look at Lars and the Real Girl, Blue Valentine, and Half Nelson, which was fantastic.
That's terrific, yeah.
But, you know, his turn in Crazy Stupid Love, he was a revelation as a comedic actor, and he was a total stud in that movie. So, yeah, you definitely have a year where you have three great and completely different performances from Gosling. And, you know, if nothing else, we'll get nominated for a Golden Globe for that one.
Sure.
For comedy.
Well, since this is not a half an hour Ryan Gosling love fest.
That's true. We should move
very
on.
Easily turn into
we
that.
Should move on.
But sticking in the theme of comedians doing something a little bit more serious, like you mentioned, Albert Brooks and Drive, Seth Rogen has a movie up at Toronto called 50-50.
Oh, let's talk 50-50.
Yeah, that he wrote with his buddy Will Reiser, who is a close friend of his, who when he was 25 years old was diagnosed with cancer. And the two of them made this movie about what it means to face a potentially deadly disease with your buddy when you're at a certain age in your life when, you know, you're trying to meet girls and trying to find a job. And so Reiser doesn't star in it. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays his character. But it's getting a lot of good buzz. And it's got, you know, Seth Rogen transitioning into films that have a little bit more of a heart and substance than some of the earlier comedies he
made.
You
know, the thing about 50-50 is, you know, this is another movie that I was able to see before Toronto. And, you know, you hear a movie about a guy who finds out he has cancer and how it, like, sort of reevaluates his priorities because of this news. And you think of a movie that could be very manipulative and like a real button pusher and tearjerker, and it's none of those things. It's a smart movie. It is moving. I mean, it does have you know, moments of heart, but it's very well written. The actors are fantastic, and it doesn't go where you think it's going to go. It's actually a genuine film. It's not one of those sort of manipulative tearjerkers, and that's also what's great about it. But getting back to Clooney, he has a second film in Toronto.
The
it's called The Descendants. And this is from the director of Sideways,
First
Alexander
time,
Payne.
First time Alexander Payne has done anything since Sideways. He
That's
worked
right.
on a pilot and writing here and there, but this is his first big film since he had so much success with that movie. It was 2004.
Yeah, 7 years ago.
Wow.
It's crazy. But yeah, The Descendants is a Fox Searchlight movie. And they were, you know, they did Juno and the Slumdog Millionaire, among other things, The Wrestler. But in this film, from what I understand, George Clooney plays a father who sort of has to rebond with his daughters after the sudden loss of his wife, and they live in Hawaii. So that's sort of the backdrop of the film. And, you know, judging
so great.
By—
So Clooney will be up in Toronto, and I'm sure it'll be really easy to cover those press
oh,
lines.
Oh, he just talks so much. Did you get your half-hour sit-down with George
right,
Clooney?
Yeah,
we
yeah.
did.
I
He's
going to
talk
Michael
all about his girlfriends.
I did for Michael Clayton, and ever since then, it seems like it's changed. But
well, you
yeah.
know what? He doesn't need to do that anymore. And you know what? I don't blame him for not wanting to do the traditional
sure.
sit-down because, you know, he makes these great movies like Syriana, Good Night and Good Luck, Michael Clayton. And what do people ask about
oh,
his
Elizabeth
girlfriends?
Oh, Elizabeth is on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
I don't care about that stuff.
I don't either.
But it seems to be what people are interested in now. But you'll see him up at Toronto. What else in Toronto you looking
Toronto,
forward
wait,
to?
Let's talk talking about the Ocean's 11 crew. His co-star Brad Pitt
yeah.
has the movie Moneyball. And this is based on a very popular book about the statistics of picking the right players. And it's based on a true story. And it's co-written by Steve Zaillian and Aaron Sorkin, who did The Social Network. So right then and there.
And again, another funny person in a more serious film. Jonah Hill playing his sidekick. This
right.
is the guy
and it's
who really
not
comes
a
up
funny
with
role.
The theory. Peter Brand, who comes up with this theory for Moneyball, which is basically, you know, the Oakland A's were a small market team competing with a payroll of around $40 million, trying to go up against the New York Yankees in the early 2000s, were spending hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's a David and Goliath story. It's a sports story. It takes you behind the scenes. And it's, again, Jonah Hill doing something a little different than some of the comedies he's done.
Also, if you think about it, it's also Brad Pitt doing something a little different, because when was the last time you saw Brad Pitt in just a straight-ahead mainstream role? I mean, even in Inglourious Basterds, even though it did very well,
nothing mainstream about that role or that
nothing.
Movie and his presence in the film. He's only in a handful of scenes
right.
in that movie. He really went out and sold the movie, which is a reason why it made so much money. But yeah, you're right. This is the first time in a while we've seen him looking like himself.
He looks like himself
in basically every frame of the movie.
Yeah, and you know, like even in the Assassination of Jesse James, you know, that was a very arty film that the probably nobody saw, but you know, the Ocean's 11 films, 12 and 13, he was part of an ensemble. And I kept trying to go back, like, when was the last time Brad Pitt was really in a super commercial mainstream role? And Fight Club was not commercial, even though it's critically acclaimed. Seven, same thing, you know,
don't
people
tell me
loved
like
it.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Maybe that's it.
Probably the one, right?
That's probably the last time. That was 2005.
So, yeah, Moneyball gets that big platform up in Toronto to try and ride it out all the way to the Oscars. Somebody else who's got a big Toronto Film Festival ahead of him is Gerard Butler. He's got two films up there.
Oh, right.
He stars in Machine Gun Preacher. Amazing true story. A guy who was down on his luck, an ex-con, heroin addict, finds God and starts to go to Africa and save children. It's an amazing, amazing story. Michelle Monaghan is in the film as his wife, and Butler is, I mean, have you seen the film yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
He's believable at times. The accent comes and goes. It's one of those situations where it's such a captivating story that you're engaged in it. However, the execution of it falls a little flat, and I don't know if I buy him as this biker with the mullet and the tattoos, but you believe him as this guy who's just steadfast on helping these kids in the war-torn Sudan. It's just really good.
And you said he's got two movies there too, right?
He also has a small role in this Ralph Fiennes film, Coriolanus, I think it's called.
Oh, sure,
a terrific movie set in Rome, modern day, but yet everybody's speaking traditional Shakespearean dialect.
Ooh.
And it's a terrific performance from Ralph Fiennes. One of those performances that the film ends and you say, my God, what did I just see? And then it comes up directed by Ralph Fiennes. And you're like,
oh wow, okay.
This guy is just incredible. So
that sounds like an ambitious kind of movie.
To Ralph Fiennes, Vanessa Redgrave's in the film, as well as the actress of the moment, Jessica Chastain.
Oh, she
is one of the 11 movies she has out right now.
Can we just talk about Jessica Chastain for a second? What a great summer she had. The movie that I saw last year at Toronto that finally opened in theaters like yesterday.
Yes, The Debt.
The Debt.
Terrific.
What a terrific. That is a superb first-rate thriller in every sense of the word. There's not a waste of moment.
Directed
in that
by
movie.
John Madden, not John Madden, the football guy.
Right,
the filmmaker.
Shakespeare in Love.
Yes, that's right.
And it's about these Mossad agents going after a Nazi war criminal, and things don't go as planned. And 30 years later, they're still guilt-ridden over lies that they told about it. And
that's probably the best movie to see this weekend. I know we're previewing films coming out in the fall, but if you're trying to see something new at the movies this weekend, I'd say go and see The Dead.
If you have not yet seen Planet of the Apes, which I loved, then you definitely have
to
see The
Dead. Who's made $300 million around the world? I think people have seen it at this point. But yeah, The Dead is that kind of under-the-radar cool movie for Labor Day.
But Jessica Chastain, she's got three other movies. Take Shelter, which was a Sundance movie. Mm-hmm. That's also going to be at Toronto. And the movie that you just mentioned. And there's another one, Texas Killing Fields.
Yeah, I was saying, coming out. Sam Worthington, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Our buddy
from
The Dead.
Six movies in like
plus
2 months.
Plus something with Shia LaBeouf, and she had Tree of Life and The Help, and she's, in a great place.
He's definitely having an excellent year.
One movie that's getting a lot of buzz, obviously, it's probably going to get an Oscar nomination for a young star. It premiered at Sundance. I'm sure you saw it. Martha Marcy May Marlene.
Oh, Elizabeth Olsen.
Elizabeth Olsen. You agree with me? She's going to get an Oscar nom this year?
That is a breakthrough, star-making performance.
Young
in
Charlize
sense
Theron, it reminds me of. She's a girl who gets sort of kidnapped in a way by a cult run by John Hawkes, who's a terrific actor. Who's
Oscar nominated for
Winner's Bone.
Winner's Bone.
And we see him on Eastbound and Down with Danny McBride.
He was also in The Perfect Storm with George Clooney.
He plays the leader of his cult, and Hugh Dancy is Elizabeth Olsen's brother-in-law, I think is who he plays. And creepy, disturbing movie, but a terrific lead performance, a star-turning performance from Lizzie Olsen. That's also going to Toronto.
And now why do people know Lizzie Olsen?
Well, she, of course, is the sister to Mary-Kate and Ashley.
That's right, and that's something
Scott, I work for the E! Channel. You don't think I know these things?
I work for Access Hollywood. That's the first thing that people said after Sundance.
But boy, this is not a New York Minute. This is not a Mary-Kate and Ashley kind of movie.
She's definitely setting up that she is doing her own thing, following her own path, and she's off to a great start with Martha Marcy May Marlene.
Yeah, she's going to get an Oscar nom this year, I think.
But let's talk about some of the other fall movies that we have to look forward to after Toronto.
There's some great filmmakers with films coming out. Cameron Crowe, We Bought a Zoo. Clint Eastwood's got J. Edgar.
Yep.
Scorsese's got his family film, Hugo. Soderbergh's got Contagion on September the 9th. Polanski has Carnage, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah, that looks good.
The trailer looks terrific.
Got a Carnage.
Kate Winslet and Christoph Waltz and John C. Reilly. It looks awesome. And Clooney's got a movie we talked about directing. So it's nice to see some big names, those kind of filmmakers that you go to the movie to watch the director as much as you watch the characters and actors on screen. So of those.
It's a shame that the sort of schedule for movies plays out so simply because, at the beginning of the year up until March, there really isn't anything noteworthy. And then the studios look to the summer for the blockbusters because that's where they make more than 45%.
As Jerry Bruckheimer always says in interviews, that's when the kids are out of school.
That's when the kids are out of school. But the fall is all about serious movies, and that's why sort of the Oscar contenders and the awards contenders are released in the fall season.
But if you look quickly, not to digress, but if you look back at this summer and summer's past, summer always has a couple highbrow movies, a couple smarter movies that find an audience. Midnight in Paris,
excellent.
The Help.
Right?
In years past, Inception, District 9, Saving Private Ryan. Like, there's always that one or two movies that come out that that amidst the sea of Green Lantern and, you know, all the nonsense that find an audience. But you're right. This is the season now for these buzzed about Oscar movies, obviously.
Well, definitely one prolific filmmaker who is still going stronger than ever, you've already mentioned him, is Clint Eastwood, J. Edgar. This is Leonardo DiCaprio playing CIA director J. Edgar Hoover. And it's going to be sort of a warts and all type of biopic. I don't know.
First time we've seen Clooney and Eastwood team up, correct?
DiCaprio and Eastwood. Yeah. Right? And, you know, DiCaprio has really been making a name for himself by choosing only the best directors to work with, not just Scorsese, but, yeah, I mean, he's done like how many movies now? Scorsese,
like
six movies,
something like that. Yeah,
but you know, Spielberg and now Clint Eastwood and Christopher Nolan. So, but yeah, he definitely is taking on challenging roles. I mean, ever since Titanic, he's shied away from doing like the blockbuster heartthrob type role, and he's an actor who's really been batting 1,000.
Worked with Woody Allen in Celebrity.
Right. And the thing about Leonardo DiCaprio is for a certain time, even though he was taking on serious roles, he still had a very young look that kept me from really embracing him in these serious roles. For example, when he did The Aviator, when he did Gangs of New York, he still had that boyish look. It wasn't until The Departed in 2006 where I finally started to feel like he was growing into the serious roles that he was trying to play. So that's why I think the timing is perfect for J. Edgar.
And what I love about Leo, and we mentioned Gosling, these guys have earned their stardom off of quality.
Yep, that's true.
A lot of stars earn their stardom off celebrity and walking red carpets. And yes, people care about who Leo's dating and who Gosling's dating, but these guys made a name for themselves off being terrific actors.
That's
all the
right.
other stuff is secondary. But there's so many people in this business where the secondary stuff is what comes to define them.
And that's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. And that's why these guys are going to be acting well into their 70s and 80s. And
Definitely.
That's why J. Edgar, another buzzed about performance, and Leo talking about Oscar and stuff.
You know, but one movie that most people, I think just about everybody is looking forward to this Christmas, and because nothing says the holidays quite like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
I know, right? David Fincher, man. Following up The Social Network. These films, the originals, are now being adapted for American audiences. I mean, this one looks good.
This
dark,
one looks violent. Fantastic, violent.
Daniel Craig. I don't know if you're a fan of the original films.
I love the original films.
Yeah. How do you think this one's going to do around Christmas time?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. I think that because of the awareness of the books, Stieg Larsson's Millennium Trilogy, people will go see this movie. It is definitely one of the most anticipated movies of the fall, and it doesn't open for another 4 months.
Yeah, right. And we've seen more and more pictures of Rooney Mara now, and it looks like she's got the look down.
Definitely.
There were some questions about her casting, but I have no doubt she'll be able to pull it off.
A lot of people wanted Noomi Rapace to reprise a role for the American remakes.
But she's working now with Downey in Sherlock Holmes 2. See, that's something family-friendly and a little lighter for bigger audiences around the holidays.
But you know what movie I actually really look forward to seeing?
Twilight, New Moon.
Okay, let's
Breaking Dawn. Part
do you want to cut to the movies that I am not looking forward
let's do
to
that.
Seeing?
Yeah, let's
okay. Okay, Twilight, yeah. Breaking Dawn Part 1 opens on November 19th.
I don't care.
I could not care less because you know what? I know that Twihards just go crazy for these movies, and maybe the books are great, but the movies have not been good at all. The acting has been very cheesy. The dialogue has been cheesy.
Set pieces have looked pretty amateur.
I'm not a fan. I see those movies really because I have to. I mean, I think you really do have to be a Twilight fan to enjoy those movies.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if those Twilight fans go and support Taylor Lautner as he stars in Abduction,
which is September 23rd. Yep.
Yeah, so I know in the past with Robert Pattinson, some of the movies he's made haven't really brought that Twilight audience with him to this new project, but
like
maybe
these actors, you know, will they be embraced outside of the Twilight umbrella?
Well, Kristen Stewart will. I mean, she's already proven that she was embraced before these Twilight movies.
That's true.
She was the most established out of the three of them. I would say Ashley Green's got a movie up in Toronto called Butter. She's in it with Jennifer Gardner and Olivia Wilde. Something that looks pretty fun.
That looks pretty fun, right?
Yeah. So, you know, will Kellan Lutz go on to be a serious actor or a Calvin Klein model? Who knows? This is big for Taylor Lautner, though, really putting himself out there. It reminds me of like a young Tom Cruise
it looks like a sort of like Bourne Identity type of role, but he sort of has that resemblance to Tom Cruise in terms of just being like a young, fresh-faced kid, you know, like right after
who can do huge action and romance and all that stuff. It's with Lily Collins, and it's got some older actors.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver's in it, too.
Yeah, it's smart of him to surround himself with some established talent and not just put it all on his back. But Twilight, not looking forward to that. I'm really not looking forward to Jack and Jill.
I'm not either.
It's just Adam Sandler is playing, got Katie Holmes as his wife now, and his sister comes to town, Jill, and it's also Adam Sandler in drag, and madness ensues. This movie's
and it's directed by the same guy who did Adam Sandler's last movie. Yeah. Was it,
Just Go With It?
Just Go With It, right.
This movie's going to make so much money.
Because it's Adam Sandler.
It's going to be huge.
It'll make over $100 million.
It's going to make me chuckle a couple times. I loved the direction he was going in his career with Funny People and thought we were going to see more stuff like that from him, or maybe even some supporting stuff. And you look at somewhere like Rain Over Me, the movie with Don Cheadle.
My favorite Adam Sandler movie is Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson film.
2002.
We were talking earlier in the show about comedians playing more serious. Sandler, I think, has the chops to do it. We saw it in Funny People.
Yeah, I like Funny People.
It seems like he's regressing now and just going back to silly.
Well, I think if he goes back and forth, he can make movies that he wants to make,
right,
you know, to challenge himself and prove that he can do serious roles, which he does. But let's talk about one movie. I don't know how you feel about the remake of Footloose.
I get it. There's a huge audience now for dance culture. If you see it on TV, it was So You Think
With
You
Glee
Can Dance and Glee,
yep,
and America's Best Dance Crew, and these step-up movies made so much money. I get it. But I don't know how they're going to modernize it. I don't know how they're going to make it believable where dancing is outlawed in a little town. The thing that's going that I got going for me for this movie, and the reason why I'm excited to see it and why I think it will be pretty good, is Craig Brewer's directing it. Craig did Black Snake Moan. He did Hustle and Flow. He's a guy from the South who all of his films have had a great musical presence to them and great soundtracks. And I just believe in Craig Brewer, and I think he'll be able to figure this out.
The one thing I got to say that might make me want to see the movie, and my feelings are a little more below the belt, no pun intended, is just Julianne Hough in tight jeans. Damn, that trailer! How does she breathe,
Scott,
let alone move around
trouble.
And dance?
I work with Ryan Seacrest. I got to watch my words rather closely right now.
Oh, that's
They've
true.
Been dating for a long time. Very happy for them.
But that's the thing, is the movie looks like such a faithful remake of the 1984, and I say this word very loosely, classic with Kevin Bacon, which, by the way, I don't know the last time you saw the original film. I saw it when it was out in theaters, okay? I was 16 years old. Man, I'm dating myself here. But it is not a good movie. It's not a good
film. That's what happens. A lot of these films that come out now, like a movie like Fright Night, for example, they say it's such a classic, the original. Well, just because the film's a little older and has somewhat of a cult following doesn't necessarily make it a classic.
And, you know, sense. Like if you're looking at it through the eyes of someone who saw it, and maybe it just makes you think about a particular time. It makes me think about high school because the soundtrack was so popular. But, you know, if you catch it on cable, it's not a good movie.
Look, they're redoing Dirty Dancing. You saw that. What guy's signed on to do it?
Ortega?
Yeah, Ortega signing on to do that. So I guess anything's up for reinterpretation. Quickly, two more movies not looking forward to seeing this fall. Tower Heist, Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller.
I don't know. That looks fun.
Michael Pena.
It looks like a funnier version of Ocean's 11.
I guess. I don't know. I guess Ratner is the best at doing these buddy comedies. White guy, black guy, Asian guy, black guy.
But the thing about Tower Heist that makes me want to see it is it looks like a good role for Eddie Murphy. I haven't liked any of his films lately. At least his live-action films, because I like him as Shrek.
Since Bowfinger?
Bowfinger! Yeah. I was going to say Bowfinger, 1999.
I had heard early on the rumors of Eddie Murphy to play the Riddler in a new Batman movie. I thought that would have been cool. But clearly that didn't happen. But yeah, Tower Heist, not too excited for. And Real Steel with Hugh Jackman?
I don't know. That could go either way.
I mean,
that could be either really good or just totally stupid.
It's like, all right, boxing movies are popular and robot movies are popular, so
let's put them together.
There's a young boy in there.
It's Transformers meets Rocky.
I mean, Anthony Mackie's in the film.
I like
the work that he does, but I don't know. From what I've seen of Real Steel this fall.
One movie you forgot to mention, I don't know. I'm not on board with the Muppets.
Really? I'm so excited for the Muppets.
Not on board with the Muppets.
You know, that's on my – I got it right here on my notes.
I don't know, man.
Film.
I got on my list to skip here, pal.
Look, now we have a Thanksgiving that's going to be without a Harry Potter movie. You know, those movies used to come out a lot around November.
That's right.
We got a big family movie for that time of year. I think the Muppets is going to be great.
The only thing I ever liked about the Muppets were the critics.
Oh,
You know, that's for obvious reasons.
you remind me of the guys in the balcony. But I think the Muppets are going to be a lot of fun. Jason Segel has loved the Muppets his whole life.
He does
life.
Have a passion
he
for it.
He has a passion for it. Nick Stoller, who directed Get Him to the Greek, is a producer on it. Amy Adams, Rashida Jones, Ken Jeong, million cameos. It's a Muppets.
It could be fun, but I don't know. I'm just not into the Muppets.
I think that's going to be good.
And I grew up with the Muppets.
So do we have time for any callers? If there's anybody listening out there who wants to call in or anybody on Twitter, you can hit us up at Movie Mance. I am at I am Ben Lyons. And I don't know if you guys have any questions. If there's anyone watching this besides my mother. Nope.
In the meantime, we have to talk about a movie that I am really looking forward to seeing. Mission Impossible.
Yeah, MI4.
Ghost Prodigal.
I'm into it. Jeremy Renner. Blow up the Kremlin.
It's directed by Brad Bird. It's his first live action movie. He did The Iron Giant. He did The Incredibles. And he did Ratatouille. And the thing about the Mission Impossible films is, you know, the first one was good. The second one was fun. The third one was great.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams.
But the third one
Philip
came
Seymour
out.
Hoffman and Michelle
unfortunately,
Monahan,
the third movie came out at the time when, you know.
Cruise is jumping on couches and getting fights about Ritalin. And
turned people off. Mm-hmm. And it was turned out to be the lowest grossing of the Mission Impossible series.
Yeah.
But it's by far the best of the three movies.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. The clips we've seen so far set in Russia look awesome.
Yep, it does look great.
Cruise is back doing action stuff. I think it's going to be good. And having Jeremy Renner as a part of it, just he makes everything he's in better. So
yeah, he's definitely on his way. And
but you know, we're talking about actors and their relationship with directors and how Leo really seeks out these filmmakers. Tom Cruise has done that throughout his career as well.
Definitely.
And he's taken some chances on young filmmakers or filmmakers that you would not expect for a certain project. I mean, J.J. hadn't done anything nearly on the size of a Mission
his
Impossible
His first movie as a director
yeah,
was Mission
first
Impossible
movie,
3.
Huge international franchise film. This guy that's directing MI4 now, you mentioned some of his films, smaller animated movies,
right.
Ratatouille
it's
and
first
The Incredibles.
First live action
movie,
yep.
Huge international tentpole. So I like the way that Cruise, when you get to a certain place in this business, you have the power to do that.
Right.
When you're an A-list actor, you can greenlight movies just based off your interest in them alone and hire the director you want. And I think he's done a great job of doing that over there.
And you know what? I think that in general, Tom Cruise is just, you know, he's sort of making a comeback. You know, the period of time when people were sort of turned off by him, I think people are finally just like moving on from that. And it's sort of, I mean, he's got a lot of interesting movies in the works.
Rock
of course, there's
Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Mission Impossible 4, I think that it's the type of movie that people want to see him in. It's an action movie. He looks like Tom Cruise. But Tom Cruise has made some very interesting choices. He's taken a lot of chances with his career. I mean, even going back to the 80s, he would mix, you know, there were times like he would have two completely different movies in the same year. In 86, he did Top Gun, but he also did The Color of Money. In 88, he did Cocktail, but he also did a Rain Man. And then in 89, he does Born on the 4th of July, which
so
I think is
tells
best
me you're
performance.
A Tom Cruise fan, Scott.
I am definitely a Tom Cruise fan. The reason I became a film critic in the first place, the first movie I ever reviewed was Eyes Wide Shut in July 16th, 1999, at 3:45 at the Village Theater in Westwood. That was the movie that changed my life.
After Buzz TV exclusive.
How about that?
Changed your life. Did you go to a mask party afterwards?
No, but I literally sat in my apartment all weekend long, and I wrote this super long review because, you know, it was Stanley Kubrick. There was a lot to write about, but I just have always, always admired the way that Tom Cruise has been able to mix really commercial films, films where he takes chances on, like Magnolia, Interview with the Vampire, Minority Report, Last Samurai.
Funny you mentioned Minority Report. That was on the other day.
That's a good movie. That is an excellent movie.
Colin Farrell.
And how do you feel about Vanilla Sky?
I loved Vanilla Sky.
I love that
movie. Cameron Crowe is out there at times, but Penelope Cruz and Jason Lee.
It is a far-out movie.
Cameron Diaz. Yeah,
very challenging.
I really like that movie.
And I like that.
My favorite Tom Cruise movie, you didn't mention it so far.
The Firm?
No, it's with Michael Mann behind the lens.
Oh, Collateral.
I mean, it's first time we've
great
seen
film.
First and only time we've really seen Cruise as a bad guy.
Yep,
as
that's a great movie.
A straight villain. And playing a hitman in Los Angeles, running around with Jamie Foxx and Javier Bardem's in that film. That's a good movie.
I don't know. There are so many great Tom Cruise films. I to pick my favorite, but I do love Jerry Maguire. You know, Few Good Men is definitely up there.
You mentioned Jerry Maguire. There's moments in Moneyball that are kind of reminiscent of Jerry Maguire.
Absolutely agree with you. Yeah. I was thinking that too.
Find some of the humanity in sports and yep. some of the human stories behind the scenes and what's going on off the field. But yeah, Cruise has a big movie, obviously. With that. You know what movie looks weird and the title's escaping me? It's that Emile Hirsch movie. It's coming out. I think it's from Summit, maybe. It's coming out in December. It's Electricity or something.
Yeah, what is the name of that film?
Crazy.
Yeah,
it looks
yeah.
really out there. I think now with, you know, this is a winter with there's no Avatar this winter. There's no Harry Potter. It's kind of up for grabs in terms of what the big movie is going to be come Christmas time and Thanksgiving. So.
You know, when I was looking to the movies for the next 3 months, I was thinking about how this summer the box office is going to be the biggest ever on record for a summer, more than $4.4 billion for the summer. That exceeds the record set in 2009, which was $4.3 billion. And, you know, as far as the rest of the year overall, I think box office is about 5% behind last year, which was a record year. Monetary-wise, attendance is still down like 2%. But I'm looking ahead to the fall, and I'm looking for like the big money makers. And outside of like Mission Impossible 4, maybe Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Twilight,
yeah, but you know those movies always make about 180.
I don't know. Yeah, those Twilight movies can put up numbers.
I mean, don't you think these people are finally growing up and moving past Twilight?
Dude, you've been to Comic-Con. You know how much they love these characters. They don't care. And they have it multi-generational. That's why those movies make so much money. It's young girls and their moms and young guys. I mean, it's a generational thing. You get multiple generations in there seeing you. That's why those movies make so much money.
And you know, you were talking before about Taro Lautner, you know, breaking out of Twilight with a movie like Abduction, which could just take him to a whole new realm. And for Robert Pattinson, I have to say I was really impressed with Water for Elephants. It came out back in April, and I thought that that was going to do better. Mm-hmm. And I think critics liked it. Maybe they didn't love it, but I definitely liked it a lot. I thought he...
I liked him in the New York movie where he was in love with...
Remember Me?
Yeah, I liked him in that.
Oh, forget it.
I thought it was a good New York love story. Movie. Pierce Brosnan and Chris Cooper
didn't do it for you. In terms of being manipulative and button-pushing, that is what I did not like about that movie. And I knew how it was going to end.
Well, the
minute it was set in 2001, I went, uh-oh, here we go.
Well, we are getting, we're getting off track if we're debating Robert Pattinson movies from 2 years ago. So I think we've done a good job of covering all the big noteworthy movies of the fall. You and I agree the best movie so far of 2011 is Drive.
Drive.
Just an awesome film
on
every level.
Excellent film.
Just terrific.
You know, people, you know, Ryan Gosling, they might not get Drive just by looking at the trailer. There's no way a 2 or 2.5 minute trailer can do justice to get the feel of this movie. There's nothing like it. I actually, in terms of the violence in the film, it made me think of Cronenberg. Because of a history of violence and Eastern Promises, you know that
very
it's
graphic,
not,
very brutal, but calculated, and when it hits hard.
Right, and it's not wall to wall violence. It's just when the violent moments happen, boy, do they happen!
That's the movie of the year so far. Hopefully, some of these movies we talked about here today will replace Drive and be even better. So it should be a fun fall. I'll see you up in Toronto.
Yep, I'll see you there too.
And I'll see you very soon right here on AfterBuzz TV. Thanks, Maria, for having us.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
From producers Kevin Undergaro and Phil Svitek, engineer DJ Jesse Janity, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. If you have questions or comments, be sure to buzz us at info@AfterBuzzTV.com. And you can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter by searching for AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. All right, peace.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.